Good morning and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Fame and Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. It is an election day.
Vote, America, right after our show.
Your words. I was just about to say that. It is also our 300th show, which is really impressive.
It is.
We
Congratulations.
Made it. Here's to 300 more.
Absolutely.
And then 300 after
Jenna's
that.
Jenna's been here for at least 260 of them.
Easily. Easily. That was, and we got our line out of the way so we can start.
Now we can just get going. She might be here for 301. Who knows?
Who knows? It's always a guessing game. L. Bell might be heading back to Pittsburgh. Dez Bryant is working out with the Saints. Wow, a lot happened while I was gone. But we're going to start with a little Monday Night Football. Dallas hosting the Titans last night. Woo, Amari Cooper making his debut for the boys, and he would get on the board early. Dak finding him in the end zone. That's a 4-yard touchdown. Yeah, Amari Cooper. Later in the first, Dak tries to find Cooper again. This time it is intercepted by Kevin Byard. Dak was not happy. Byard was midfield in the star, little T.O. inspiration.
That was
this
a lot
would
of going
continue
around
to get ugly for Dallas. Third quarter, we're tied at 14. Dak Prescott fumbles recovered by the Titans. They score in the next possession, make it 21-14. Then finally, Marcus Mariota running it in with less than 5 minutes to go, and that would seal the win. Cowboys fall 28-14. They are now 3-5 on the season. Here's Dak Prescott after the game.
It's disappointing. I mean, we just didn't get the job done. We all got to do better, and it starts with me. It starts with me first all the way throughout this whole team. So, I mean, very disappointed, as you said, coming off the bye week. Cleaned things up. Felt good going into this one. And as to come out with this loss to be 3-5 is very disappointing.
And we didn't see this coming. That's all the more reason, because we did have a lot of time to prepare and had a lot of time to get ready and made some changes that we thought we could make and give us a better shot than this. So this is quite if you will, it's a step back for us. The turnover, the fumble after the last game we had, the two fumbles, I'm sure we'd all like to have back. Tonight's game did not, I emphasize, impact my future look at Dak Prescott.
Jerry, better watch out. We're going to hit by that bus that's been backing up right into that interview right there. Jerry also mentioned that he's not going to be making any changes with Jason Garrett or Dak Prescott this season. We'll get to that in a second. But let's start with the game. What went so wrong, CC, for the Cowboys last night?
Well, it's just not the game, Jenna. I'm going to go back to because really this Cowboys team over the last 20 years, regardless of what people say, regardless of anything else, they've been an average organization. That's the real, real truth. It's not just about last night. Last night, they've had a lot of nights like last night. We just let them pass by. But what happened last night is what continued to happen since they drafted Dak and Zeke and had them together. They really thought that they had the triplets back together in some form or fashion, that huge offensive line. But since that season, and Nick, I remember you and I getting together. We were doing a lot of shows, trying to build some chemistry.
Yep.
And I was like,
before
Nick,
this show started,
I don't believe that they're going to continue to grow this. Like, I don't think this is the best way. Like, I don't think this is a dynasty.
The day after the Packers loss, the day after the 13-3 Cowboys lost Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in a game that, by the way, Dak Prescott played excellent in, Chris Carter and I were on television together on someone else's show. I don't know if it was Collins or Skip and Shannon's, whatever it was. And Chris said, I think they will look back on this year as the best chance they had to win a Super Bowl with Dak and Zeke. And at the time, it seemed crazy, with respect. I thought... What is he talking about?
Because both like,
these guys are rookies. They just had awesome years.
Yep.
And now we've got 24 games of data since then to say it sure looks like you were right.
And I it's not a matter of me being right or wrong, but I missed a couple things because I thought Dez and Witten would still be there. So I still thought that they would have some chemistry. I didn't know the NFL rules would change. I didn't know the way people would offensively, how they would try to attack defenses would be totally different. Now, Dallas, they're trying to build this team as if they think they have Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, and they just want to overpower people. And in those years, they had an underrated defense. What happened last night? They have not grown the offense. Dak has not gotten better since the rookie season. And when they negate Zeke from going off and dominating in a game, it's hard for the Cowboys to win. Anytime he throws the ball more than 25 times, they struggle to be able to win games. It's not as if he can't throw the ball. He's just not a dominant passer in an era that I think that there's more passers, quality passers throwing the football. So his weakness.
Wait, is that power or is that accuracy? When you said it's not that he can't throw
the
ball,
it's a combination. It's a combination because there's a lot of guys that have a big arm, but I'm talking about being a pitcher like Greg Maddux. You can throw a fastball, slider, a changeup. And if they take away my running game, I can throw the ball 40 times and we can still win. So it's not about strength, actually. It's about the ability to play the position at a high, high level.
And, Chris, you're talking about the macro, like systemically for the Cowboys. On the micro from last night, they blew this game in the first 10 minutes. First drive, they move the ball down the field, miss a chip shot field goal. There's 3 points wasted. Second drive, they get after the great play by DeMarcus Lawrence, who continues to be one of the most underrated pass rushers in this league. Sets him up for a touchdown, and they get it. Amari Cooper runs a really interesting route. I know we'll talk about later that you thought he kind of audibled on his own, adjusted on his own what he saw from Malcolm Butler, took advantage of it. And then they get another fumble. And instead, it felt like, I know this might sound, you might say I'm crazy, but it felt like they were trying to immediately justify the Amari Cooper trade. You got first and goal inside the five.
Yeah.
How about you just run it up the middle with Zeke a few times? You can go up 14-0 on a Titans team that was ready to let go of the rope. You saw the look on Vrabel's face. Instead, this wasn't a pass to Amari Cooper in the end zone that got tipped, that you got unlucky, someone made a great play. He was double-teamed from the snap. You're throwing off your back foot into double coverage like it's fourth down. Like, I got to throw it somewhere, so we'll see what happens. That's second down, man. Like, that is a terrible play by Dak. And then, after they have their one sustained drive of the entire game, the touchdown right before the half, start of the third quarter, Dak on 3rd and 14 is fighting for 2 yards to make it 4th and 12 and fumbles the football. Like, those are terrible plays.
Yes.
Those are, and Dak's rookie year, what made him was the 4 interceptions. And since his rookie year, since 2017, here's the list of quarterbacks with multiple turnovers in a game, with 10-plus multiple turnover games. Jameis, he's been benched. DeShone Kizer, he's not a starter. Derek Carr, we don't know what his future is. And Dak Prescott. Those are the only quarterbacks in the league with 10 multiple turnover games. You can't win that way. If your quarterback's not going to make big plays down the field, you cannot be turning the ball over in critical spots.
I thought the exact same thing you did, that the Cowboys were trying to justify getting Amari Cooper for what they spent on him. Let's get him out early. Let's show the world that we made the right choice. We spent exactly what we needed to spend, and they
forced it. And that's one of the typical little things that NFL teams. We saw Demaryius Thomas get traded over to Houston.
Yep.
He had 61 yards. For the whole game in the first 8 minutes. A lot of times, too, playing the wide receiver position, if a guy, you want to get a guy comfortable, so you try to get him involved early. So I could see why teams in Dallas and also the Texans, we saw them trying to justify that trade and immediately in the game.
So what about what we mentioned earlier, that a reporter asked Jerry Jones about the future of both Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott, and he said, we're not going to make any changes this year. Do you agree with him that now's not the time to make any drastic changes with this team?
Well, you can see that they've already made some drastic changes last week when they fired the offensive line coach. That's not something Jerry typically does. Now, there's a guy that they had in the wings who played for the Cowboys, and they feel like that he could do a better job. But last night, one of the things in this game was the offensive line has underperformed. Now, they really missed their all-pro center, but as a group, they just have not grown. 2 years ago, 2016, that was the last time we called them justifiably the best offensive line in football. They are not that currently. So you see them, they tried to make a change. I don't think the Cowboys get better if you fire Jason Garrett during the season. Like, I don't believe
the
direction.
And they don't have Chris Richard going to become the head coach. Sometimes it's easier to fire a head coach if you have a Wade Phillips there, if you have a guy who's been a head coach there. But speaking of Wade Phillips, yesterday was November 5th, right?
Yeah.
November 5th, 2018 was yesterday. November 5th, 2010. Credit to Mike Florio and Pro Football Talk for pointing this out, because I wouldn't have known it otherwise. November 5th, 2010. Jerry Jones was asked, will Wade Phillips finish the year? He said yes. 3 days later, he fired him. So that was 8 years ago yesterday.
Jason Garrett.
Yeah, he said this guy is finishing the year.
Yep.
And 3 days later, he fired him. I'm not saying history is going to repeat itself, but there is a template for Jerry Jones saying, hey, he's safe, and then he's not being safe. Because what Jerry's not used to is their team coming off a bye and getting blown out. It's their worst loss coming off a bye in 15 years. And you heard it in his comments. He's like, we had the extra week to prepare.
Yes.
That seems to be something that really bothered him. We had an extra week to prepare, and we got gifts early. Two turnovers early in our territory, and we couldn't take advantage
of it. Dallas Cowboys, now 3-5. Also, you said November 5th, so today's November 6th.
What?
Today is my dad's birthday. Happy birthday,
Adam. Happy birthday.
Sorry I did not remember sooner. Thank you for reminding me, Nick. We got to take a break.
I'm sorry I didn't
I know, you should have reminded me. Why didn't you remind me? See, coming up.
Happy birthday.
L. Bell might be coming back, but
do
the Steelers still want him?
L. Bell might show up.
And more words from Chris Carter next on First Things First.
L. Bell to jump out of the cake?
Yes, I mean, right now.
Under siege?
He's already
We'll get to L. Bell in a second, but first, Monday Night Football. Cowboys' Allen Hurns fakes out Malcolm Butler before scoring the 23-yard touchdown.
I think I could have gotten open on Malcolm Butler last night. I don't know what route I would have run, maybe a stop and go, maybe the zigzag route I've been talking to you about, but I think I could have broke him down one time last night.
I think that's the reason why we had him in the game as an X factor yesterday. We didn't. We knew he would have a factor.
It wasn't
great. And we knew, based on the season, it could be bad.
To the NBA, watch Kyrie Irving with the acrobatic reverse layup.
Listen, took Kyrie about 10 days to get into this year, but now he is fully fledged Kyrie Irving. A little salty last night about Jamal Murray trying to go for 50, but Kyrie went for 31 himself. He was very good in a Celtics loss last night.
To OKC, Terrence Ferguson, nice pass from Russell Westbrook before rising for the slam.
Terrence Ferguson needs to eat a few sandwiches. But aside from that, he's a very interesting young
player. Literally
never
said that sentence
A little before. Frail. He's a little thin, Jenna.
I'd love to be there and then have to eat
sandwiches.
He needs
some hoagies, maybe.
A couple gyros.
Yeah, not a good attempt to block that by Jrue Holiday.
Oh,
better getting out of the way on that one.
I mean, he didn't want to get posted.
Guy was on a mission.
Oh, watch out.
Nick's
watch
goals.
Out. Yeah. That's the chase down.
Did you see that? Look at the block on Zach LaVine. Boom.
Zach LaVine is playing at an all-star caliber this year. Surprising.
Good point.
All of a sudden, that Jimmy Butler trade is looking better and better for the Bulls every day. But this is a great play by Alonzo Trier.
He really responded to that injury from last year, bounced back well. Keep your eyes on him. Not only a high flyer, man, his offensive game, he can score the basketball.
Absolutely. Good job by Alonzo Trier. Is it Trier? I think it's Trier.
All right, let's move on to the latest of Le'Veon Bell, the miniseries. If Bell is going to play football this year, he has to report to the Steelers by November 13th. Well, we are now 1 week away from that date, and as of this morning, the team hadn't heard from Bell. The Twitter universe has, however. Le'Veon tweeted, "Farewell, Miami," spelled that way, where he had been spotted multiple times this season. Teammate David DeCastro spoke out Sunday about L. Bell.
Why don't I waste energy? I got to block some of the best players in this best defense in the world. You think I'm going to worry about a guy that's not here? It doesn't matter. Whoever's here, I'm going to block my heart out, whether it's Le'Veon, whether it's James in the backfield, whether it's Jalen Ridley. It doesn't matter. We're all professionals out here, and we just want to win with whoever's here.
So what do you think? I mean, how should the Steelers even handle L. Bell if he is to return?
All right, so if he returns, it would ostensibly be after their game this week. They would have 7 games remaining. And if I'm Pittsburgh, the way I handle it is I put him on the exempt list for 2 weeks.
Yes.
So in that way, he can be in the building.
Mm-hmm.
He can be in the building.
He gets
in
paid.
Meetings,
but at a lesser rate.
Right, at a lesser rate, but forget the money side of it. Listen, Le'Veon Bell, here's the thing people have to recognize when it comes to the money. I think Le'Veon Bell would tell you this. He has chosen conservation over compensation. Like, this has clearly not been the right decision from a financial perspective. But if he has decided, I'm the most heavily used running back in league history, I'm awaiting the one long-term contract I'm ever going to get, it is worth it sacrificing these $10 million some dollars, that's his prerogative. I think he has chosen conserving his body over the compensation.
So why come back at all this year?
Because I think he understands that he is taking an enormous risk as far as giving the Steelers the leverage, where if they wanted to be spiteful, even though they've given indicators they wouldn't, if he doesn't come back this year, they could franchise him again. You know what I mean? Like, he could be in a spot where, even if I don't think it would make sense for Pittsburgh to do it. You heard Eric Mangini say a few weeks ago, You might do it just to tell your entire locker room, this will not be tolerated. We are not going to let you hold us over a barrel. So I think he would be taking an enormous gamble by not showing up. I still think it's on the board he doesn't, but that farewell Miami tweet leads you to believe he is leaving Miami, he's going to Pittsburgh. And then, but to answer your question, I think James Conner right now is, at this very moment, better because he's been playing all year, because he is in better condition. I think by the end of the year, you would have a real question, but early on, I'd go a couple weeks exempt, and then I would slowly get him involved in the running game, see?
I would change my offense, and I would let my offensive coordinator know this is what I want to do. And it's a unique situation. I do believe James Conner is the future. I do believe that the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin, there's a certain amount of commitment they have to make to the rest of that locker room. And putting your best team out there, regardless of what your ego might be, regardless of what's in the best interest of the team. In the best interest of the team, when you're trying to maybe go to Kansas City and beat them or go to New England and beat them, it's to have L. Bell and James Conner as your featured running backs. Forget all this stuff. Because this is how I would do it.
Okay.
James Conner's my starter. L. Bell's not ready to play. I don't care if he's been in Miami working out. James Conner, he's got four straight 100-yard games.
Yep.
Have they not won four in a row?
Correct.
Is that offensive line not playing the best football that they play? So that's my answer right there. That justifies my day. It's not as if he lost his spot, but he's going to have to earn his way back into this offense. I mean, they're within a game and a half out of home field advantage. There's eight games left. A lot of things can happen. What if Pittsburgh end up with one or the two seed? Like, I think the best Pittsburgh Steelers team is now not an unproven James Conner, but a proven Conner with a fresh L. Bell that I can put in matchups. I can use how I want to use. Forget what his goals are. Forget what's going to happen next year. I'm not going to help him because not because of spite, not because I don't think it's in the best interest of Pittsburgh. I would go forward with two running backs and attack the rest of this eight-game schedule, trying to win as many of those games as possible.
Could they look at, just 1 year ago, the template from New Orleans, with James Conner being the Mark Ingram and with Le'Veon Bell being the Alvin Kamara? Two guys who we saw both have, I think it was, 1,200 yards from scrimmage combined, the two of them. Might have been 1,500 yards. I know it was the most pair in league history. Kamara was more of the receiving threat and then get out on the edges. Mark Ingram more of the hammer. Could they do something like that?
The problem with that is there's such respect from Alvin to Ingram. And you're not going to have that. Even though they have a relationship, James Conner to L. Bell, L. Bell has told them, I'm the most important thing. This team winning is not the most important thing. James Conner's growth is not going to be an important thing. So I don't think you're going to get a complete buy-in, because if L. Bell is true to what he's done, that he's trying to showcase a rested body, he's going to want to be on the field as much as possible.
So I thought about it the different way. I thought he actually, I think Le'Veon Bell believes, as long as I'm healthy, my body of work speaks for itself. I thought, in my eyes, he'd be very satisfied.
That's what I thought.
With 10 to 15 carries and touches.
Like, I have never seen a superstar sit out there and watch the game and know they can make an impact on the game and be satisfied. Now, we've never had a contract issue like this, but I just believe, when you get the blood and stuff, when he gets away from his agent and he gets back in that locker room,
then all of
everyone
a sudden,
is in there to play
juices.
Football.
Okay.
And we have a buy-in to say, man, for this game, for this week, we're getting ready to everyone buy in and do whatever they can so that we can win this game. Now, L. Bell's going to have to prove that to his teammates. That's why I start James Conner. And that's why I don't miss a beat. And I let him know this is a role, and you can either accept it or you can sit around and pout. I don't care. I think it's time for Mike Tomlin just to continue with the, listen, I'm here to win football games, and James Conner is going to be part of their future.
Is there something to what ain't broke, don't fix? I mean, for once all season, there's no real drama in this Steelers locker room. They've won four in a row. Nobody's complaining about anything. And we already know that this locker room is a little frustrated with the whole L. Bell situation. Is there something to riding this out and seeing where it goes, even if L. Bell comes back?
It would be nice to do that, but this is about talent. And when you have someone like Le'Veon Bell who's actually on your roster and he's decided that I'm going to end my holdout, you have to give him benefit of the doubt that he's going to be bought into whatever the team concept. The day he steps into the locker room, Listen, we got to get beyond being disappointed or whatever.
Your
you
team have to know, gets
the Pittsburgh today. Steelers are a better football team.
And if they thought that was the case, as soon as he sent that tweet, they'd have rescinded the tag. If they thought it was the case that him coming here is going to be more trouble than good, that he can't help us, they'd have rescinded the tag and let him go sign elsewhere. Like, there is going to be some consternation. There's going to be some frustration. There's going to be some, we've all gone through the football version of boot camp together, and then this guy comes in for the fun part, the games and the playoff push. But they do recognize, I believe, talent is what wins in this league. Why are the Chiefs the best team in the AFC? That overwhelming offensive talent. Why are the Rams and Saints the best teams in the NFC? The overwhelming offensive talent.
Look at it from this way. What do you think the New England Patriots, what do you think the top teams Kansas City would want you to do?
Right.
And that would be
bench him. Never play him.
There you go. Now you know what the thing to do is. All right, because if you're going to beat those teams to win that AFC, to get to the Super Bowl, which the Pittsburgh Steelers, that's their goal, then you got to get beyond all that and let's move on. They're a better team when he walks in the door.
Except last year it took him how many games before he got back to
health? Took him three, but this year they're going
to
be able to ease him back in because
right,
of James Conner. Like, they're not going
to
have to just have him run in the line while he's getting himself
I think he'll
ready.
Be a little better ready this year the second time around. Because I think he knows what's at stake. His whole career is at stake. These last eight games are very, very important.
Huge gamble. If he doesn't come out and look like the old Le'Veon Bell, he will have cost himself not just this year's money, but the potential for some money in the future years.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, why losing might actually be a good thing for the former undefeated Rams. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back. Thursday Night Football returns this week with a battle of NFL heavyweights. We got Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, and the Panthers battling Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, streaming on Prime Video. That is going to be
a great
football game.
Two of the hottest teams in football playing each other. Huge game for both teams. Can't wait.
Time for us to go viral. Klay Thompson went off for a game-high 27 points in the Warriors' 117-101 win over the Grizzlies last night. So how did Klay prepare before the game? By channeling his inner Happy Gilmore, sinking the putts, and then watch the dance.
Is that Klay's house?
If it is, it's very
nice. Look at my man. Very. Living in the Bay.
Very nice.
Staring at probably about to get about $160 million soon. Already got about $80 million.
Not much space between his house and the house next to him.
They're in San Francisco,
not
Jenna.
Not much property. I just
Jenna, it's a very
that's
densely
a nice
populated
setup.
Area.
Yeah, clearly.
Warm weather, probably looking at the ocean or something.
How much space is between your house and your neighbor's house, Jenna?
Right now?
No.
None.
Yeah.
Live
in an apartment building in New York City.
I wish I could make me some putts in my backyard.
Oh, yeah.
I'm out walking out with the dogs and everything. That don't get me started on these New York streets, walking out with the dogs.
Curb those puppies.
C's about to move to the suburbs.
Oh, I got to do
it. Are you?
I got a list of houses for you, C.
When?
Get out of here.
What? I got them for you. I sent them to you last night.
Stories to start your morning. Don't leave, C. Did you catch the end of the Nuggets-Celtics game last night? Look at this. Jamal Murray, 48 points, tried to make it 51 as time expired. Kyrie, not on board with the plan, threw the ball into the stands, calling it a bull blank move. What'd you make of this?
Listen, I don't mind what Jamal Murray did, trying to go for 50. That's a cool thing to have on your resume. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind Kyrie Irving saying, hey, man, that's Bush League. Like, I don't think either one was in the wrong. If I'm Jamal Murray, he's never made an all-star team, trying to get his name out there. He's one of the better young players in the league. He's probably the second best player on the Nuggets behind Jokic. Wants people to know who he is. And Kyrie's saying, come on, man, we're all professionals. What are you doing? I get both sides on this.
Yeah, it's kind of a professional courtesy at the end of game. So I do understand Kyrie. Mm-hmm. You did have a chance, though, to stop some of them buckets. I mean, he went for 48.
Yes.
I mean, don't get mad at me late in the game because you had a chance to stop me from maybe going for 15 and 20 and 30 and maybe 40.
And he didn't drive to the basket when they were done playing defense to get a cheap layup. He was going to have to make the three-pointer.
Yes.
But he didn't.
Jamal was cool. He said, I'm sorry, I let the emotions get the best of me afterwards. He's now my guy.
There you go.
Oh,
yes.
I like that.
Okay.
That was nice. Back to, I got a lot of guys.
Canadian.
Back to the NFL.
He's cute, too.
Yeah, he is.
You kind of like, you have a type, Jenna.
I do.
I see that.
Soft cheekbones.
Amari Cooper made his Cowboy debut last night. 5 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown. All right, C, how did Amari Cooper look last night, in your opinion?
I thought he looked good. He looked like the number one receiver. He looked like a young Amari Cooper that I remember from Alabama. He looked like a young Amari Cooper in year one and year two. You could see his acceleration in and out of his breaks. You can see that he had his confidence back as far as catching the ball out in front of him with his hands. You could see that he's a dangerous weapon running with the football. So very, very happy for him. This is the Amari Cooper I expect to see with the Cowboys.
He made an adjustment on the touchdown catch that you saw that I didn't realize. Tell him what it was.
Yeah, when Malcolm Butler got real aggressive with him at the line of scrimmage, you can see he aborted the first stem part of his route and immediately went inside, took his head away from the quarterback, and you could see the separation when he put his foot in the ground and changed directions. I know Dak was like, now, I have never seen something like that before. It's called reading on the run. Amari Cooper, good debut with the boys.
All right, moving on to the Ravens, who have lost four of their last five games. Questions now over whether it's time to move on from Joe Flacco. John Harbaugh says, we're rolling right now with what we got at the quarterback position. Is that the right move for the team right now, Nick?
For the next few weeks, sure. But once they're eliminated, and they will be eliminated in a few weeks with the way Flacco's playing, then I got to get Lamar Jackson in there. Joe Flacco, after week one this year, so take out week one, 9 touchdowns, 6 picks, a 70-something passer rating, and a 50-something completion percentage, that's terrible. Since the Super Bowl, he's been one of the least efficient quarterbacks in all of football. This year, he hadn't been any better, so I think the time is approaching, not this week, but soon, to put Lamar in there.
Nick, I'd like to go over your preseason predictions on the quarterbacks that were all drafted in the first round.
Yes.
You thought, ultimately, by November, all of them would be starting.
Correct.
So he's a couple weeks off the pace that you had predicted several months ago.
Lamar could be a starter for this team?
Yeah, absolutely. They drafted him.
That's what Nick had predicted, that the season would go bad and they would go to Lamar.
All right, finally, tough outing for Sam Darnold Sunday, throwing 4 picks in the Jets' loss to Miami. Sam Darnold now leads the league this season with 14 picks and referred to Sunday's game as plain stupid football. Chris, are we starting to worry about the long-term future of Sam Darnold?
No, this is how rookie quarterbacks play. If you look at the lack of money that they spent on wide receivers and those guys being inconsistent because they've been injured the last several weeks, lost a lot of practice time, you could see them growing. This is how rookie quarterbacks have to play in the NFL. They get beat up. They make a lot of mistakes. They throw more interceptions than they do touchdowns, typically. But no, I still got the same amount of faith in Sam Darnold, as long as he doesn't get hurt. All right, because he took a lot of shots in Sunday's game, but he was right in critiquing his game because he wasn't under duress. Sometimes he rushed the ball because he was under duress under the other plays that forced his clock to go off, and he started missing in places that you're not supposed to miss as a quarterback. He had a deep out route on the sideline. He underthrows the guy to the undercover. So you got to miss that guy on the sideline or miss it over there where on the bench area. So I can understand throwing late across the middle, scrambling right, throwing back cross of his body compared to throwing the ball out of bounds. So he's right. Critique himself very, very hard, but no, I still have a tremendous amount. They will be very active in free agency. I believe they'll get a big-time running back and a big-time wide receiver for Sam Darnold in year number two.
Listen, there's 3 teams in the league that have scored 20 or fewer points at least 6 times this year. The Jets, the Cardinals, and the Bills. What do they all have in common? Those are all guys, teams that drafted a quarterback in the first round and have started that quarterback. Now, in the Bills, that guy's been injured, and so they've had to go to Peterman and Derek Anderson. But this is somewhat what you would have expected. And of all the rookie quarterbacks, the one that I think you expected probably to have the biggest issue with turnovers is Darnold, a guy who turned the ball over 20-plus times his final year at USC. Mm-hmm. Ball security as far as fumbling and as far as reading the defense, throwing picks, he's always been a bit of a risk taker. Now, he was really bad against Miami. Bart Scott was coming on later, got really upset because Todd Bowles talked about how the defense has to do better when it was the offense that cost them that football game. But I haven't seen anything from Darnold this year that would make me change what my of feelings on him were before the year. It's about what you'd expect. He's been awful when he's been under pressure, and he's been under pressure a lot. Mm-hmm. No quarterback's great when they're under pressure, particularly rookie quarterbacks, and we knew he was going to turn the ball over. Now, if you weren't optimistic about him going into this year, then he hasn't done anything to change your mind. But if you were optimistic about him, like look at Peyton's, and he's not Peyton Manning, I understand, but even look at Peyton Manning's interceptions.
As smart as he was.
His rookie year.
Yes.
Like almost all of these guys throw a lot of picks. If you're thrown into the fire week one,
as a rookie, you're going to have a lot of interception games. It's not shocking. Now, four picks is obviously at least about three too many, but it doesn't shock me that he's on pace for mid-20s interceptions.
Would I be crazy if I'm a Jets fan and I'm looking for a silver lining here to say something that Andy Reid once said about Patrick Mahomes, which is if you have a young guy throwing a lot of picks, like he's willing to put himself back out there to take chances, to still be aggressive, and not to get nervous and to hold back? Is that what you want to see in a young guy?
Absolutely. We've seen some of the best quarterbacks ever play this game. That rookie year, man, they throw some picks. The speed of the game is drastically different, but they're also trying to make things happen. Sam Bradford's playing exactly like he did.
Sam Darnold. So is Sam
playing
Bradford,
exactly.
He's
Sam Bradford's doing exactly,
exactly
what he
does.
Sitting on the sideline, hurt, not practicing.
Checks.
Yeah. So, but he's playing that way because lack of overall talent at the position and trying to do too many things. But this is the typical introduction into the NFL.
And if you look at percentage of times he's been pressured, his best games all year, not shockingly, have been the few games where his offensive line's kept him clean. You mentioned they need a running game and a wide receiver. They also, the Jets are one of the least talented rosters in football. Again, I'm not trying to sell anyone that Sam Darnold's going to be great. All I'm saying is I would not overreact to awful games when he is in as tough of a situation as any quarterback in football right now.
Jen and I see the silver lining.
Of course. Also, Jets fans are used to this. They're like, are you kidding? We're having the best year. This is a great year
for us.
Excited. The bar is buried under mud. On Sunday, in an offensive shootout, the Saints handed the Rams their first loss on the year. It was a tough day for the Rams secondary, especially for Marcus Peters, surrendering 211 yards and the game-sealing touchdown as he attempted to cover Michael Thomas. However, Peters says there's a silver lining, speaking of which, in the loss.
Third down to six, man. Got up the line. He just beat me off the line. Look back, try to make a play on the ball. It happens like that in football.
Were you trying to communicate something to teammates right before that?
Oh, man. It happens like that in football. We were just trying to get a line, and we were trying to get something out, and it just happened like that, man. I got beat. You know, communication, regardless of all that, I got beat. Once the play starts, man, you got to go out there and you got to compete, man. And I did, and they got off, and they got a 72-yarder.
This is the first loss for you guys this season. Mm-hmm. Did you guys think, maybe this day would come, or now that it's here, what's it like?
No, man. How good this team is, we don't never think this day would come because we fight so hard together. We know all three phases we're going to go out there and compete. That's why we came back at the end of the game. That just shows just how tough we are, how together we are. But, man, it's going to actually be a good thing for us, man. We get to go back to work, and we get to just have an extra little hunger edge, you know, coming off the loss.
Listen to that whole interview. I like what Marcus Peters did. He took it on himself. He said, you know what? I got beat on that play. I haven't been playing great the last couple of weeks. He said, I know that. I'm better than that. I'll get back out there and try harder, which is great. There's also something to be said for maybe taking some pressure off the Rams team now that they don't have to play every week and answer questions about being undefeated. What can this team build on following that loss?
Well, I think it's real pressure. I was on a team that was 7-0, 1998. We ended up going 15-1 during the regular season. Came up a little bit short of the Super Bowl. But, yes, there is real pressure. Anytime we get to the halfway point, and it's very, very rare that we have a team that's undefeated. So all the beat writers, all the national media, everyone is on. We've only had two teams ever do it. One that was really significant, the 72 Dolphins. We know about the 07 Pats, but they didn't win it all. So there is pressure because it's a constant week after week. The questioning, and they're asking questions of people typically who aren't even being interviewed. Offensive linemen, guys who aren't marquee players. So there is a pressure of that. I do believe if they look at the game, especially who the opposition was, and really try to critique themselves like Marcus Peters was trying to do in the interview, I think they will get better. I think that Wade Phillips, he's a great coach. He's handled this locker room, and I believe he'll handle this loss. Well, he'll pick apart that defense of their lack of being able to stop the run, their lack of being able to get off the field in third down. So I do believe that you can use this. Most teams that get to this point, yes, they use it as a stepping stone and realize that that was a tough environment to go into against a good football team. That was not a bad loss. They should be encouraged by the huge comeback. They made a lot of mistakes and still had an opportunity to be able to win that game. So I like Marcus Peters addressing it. I like the way he stood up and like, no, I'm not going to. There was a couple opportunities in that interview to make an excuse.
Well, and I wouldn't have even considered an excuse. There's a difference between excuse and explanation. And one of the reporters said, are you hurt? And he was like, where'd you get that? Listen, he is hurt. And there's a weird thing that happens in sports. He and Aqib Talib got hurt in the same game. Aqib Talib was unable, and I'm not knocking for this, to play through the injury.
Nobody is questioning has Aqib Talib fallen off. He's just injured. Marcus Peters is playing through.
No, I saw him on the sideline. He had gold and diamonds. Yeah. He ain't fallen off. His game is still on.
Exactly right. But, like, if you get injured so substantially that you can't play, no one questions if you're still as good of a player. But if you get injured just enough to where it hampers your play, but you play through it, people start saying, well, you can't use injury as an excuse. You got to figure out a way. So that's the thing that happens across all sports. It's usually not very fair. But Marcus Peters just said, no, I've got to be better.
No, but the good players, they don't put themselves in a position. I just believe that Marcus Peters, when he was in Kansas City in their locker room, he's a young, talented player and a volatile personality. Yes. So he didn't have to be a leader. And now with Talib is an NFL leader. You can say whatever you want. That dude is a leader of men. And from what we've heard of the intel, Talib does a lot with Marcus Peters. So now that leadership role, when he's not out there, Marcus Peters was trying to direct traffic. He was trying to get this secondary in good position. He didn't use that as an excuse. So I believe when you get that leadership back, Marcus Peters, towards the end of the season, will be a little healthier than he is right now. So I believe the Rams will get better from that.
Here's the thing. You mentioned when you guys lost to Tampa in 90. It was Tampa, right?
Yes.
You guys in 98. Tampa was a good team, but they weren't. That loss would have been different if it were to Atlanta. Because Atlanta was the team fighting with you for the number one seed. Now, I know you ended up losing to them in the conference championship game. But the point I'm making is this. I understand the Rams saying, hey, we can learn from this. We now don't have to worry about the scrutiny of being undefeated. But had they won on Sunday, they would have eliminated the Saints from contention for the one seed. Now they're in a real fight with the Saints. If they finish with the same record, the Saints get the they have the tiebreaker. Like this, not all losses.
Won.
All losses are not created equal.
Right.
Like if they, you know, what would have been a better loss for the Rams if they had been undefeated going into that Chiefs game in 2 weeks. That's a cross conference loss. There's not going to be any tiebreakers involved. Like so, this there is some substance to what this means for the Saints and what it means for the Rams.
But they won seven games in a row. Like, the Saints are legitimate. Any team in the NFL, when you go to New Orleans, they got Drew Brees.
Oh, of course.
You know you're in for a dogfight. So I don't think we got too many games left, and the Saints' schedule is too hard to be in week number eight to say, you know something? Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, in the head-to-head, but we didn't think the Rams were going to go undefeated. I do believe there are good losses and bad losses, and this one I would put in a good category.
Look, how many times do we talk about a game and build a game up and hype a game up only to be disappointed because one team blows out the other? These were two very good games who went head-to-head and played a very good offensive game. And coming up, we'll talk about maybe where their defenses are holding them back a little bit. But I think fans got what they wanted, and now it's going to be a nice fight.
It's a great game.
Absolutely. I'm just going to keep dropping things. Coming up, can the Packers make a playoff push the second half of the year?
Candy
just
up
throw
here.
It. It's next on First Things First. Back here on the show, Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins us. What's up?
Get your Air 5. You're a little under the weather. It's all good.
No, I'm over the weather.
You're back?
I am over the weather.
Okay,
but Air 5 me anyway.
Air 5.
Woo! Oh, and I can do it with my kids. You miss me. Say it. Just say it.
Miss. We miss Gemma.
National treasure.
Not the happiest of times. Happiest of times would also be the word we use there in Green Bay, Bart Scott. First, they lost to the Patriots on Sunday. A Patriots team, mind you, without Sonny Michel or Rob Gronkowski, and their record is now 3-4-1, third in their division. Head coach Mike McCarthy, in an effort to say something so obvious, admitted that if the team has any shot at the playoffs, they'll have to play much better in the second half of the year.
We improved as a football team in the last 2 weeks, but, you know, you have to play your best football coming down the stretch, and that's clearly been evident the last 2 weeks. We're not playing to the level we need to play in the fourth quarter, and that'll be a big part of our focus this week. We're very transparent about self-improvement, and I think it has to start with the head coach, and you know, then the play callers, and then the decision makers, but at the end of the day, it comes down to football. You know, players have to make plays; they got to execute, and that's the reality of it.
All right, Bart, looking at who the Packers have right now, the way this team, what you saw on Sunday and the way this team is currently constructed, do they have what it takes and the personnel to make a push in the second half?
I think they do. When you look at, first of all, no stuff, Sherlock, for McCarthy. Like, come on, way to state the obvious. You know, you can't get the time of my life back.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at their schedule, you know, they got Arizona, they got the Falcons, they got the Bears, the Jets.
And then the Lions. The last five games are winnable.
Right. They're very winnable games, but it all depends on how well Minnesota is going to continue to play. If Minnesota continues to run away with the division, I'm starting to look at the NFC South, and it's looking like Carolina is going to be one of the wild cards. And now, look out, the Atlanta Falcons are starting to figure out how to play and make adjustments without a tremendous defense. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's going to be tough to get that last wild card spot. But whenever you got the best quarterback in the game, you have a chance. And I thought they had an opportunity to beat the Patriots after that fumble. It really deflated them. They had an opportunity to go ahead and then put the pressure back on the Patriots and make them try and keep pace. But the bigger tragedy is that with Mike McCarthy, that seat has to be hot by now because they got rid of the general manager last year.
That's what we've been
saying.
They're
starting to spend money. But then, you know, when you have the best quarterback in the game and you're not consistently in the AFC championship, you're not in the divisional round, then somebody's doing something wrong because the hardest thing to get is the quarterback. And they can't find a way to build around him. Now, I understand he takes a big piece of the pie, probably over 30% of the pie being the highest paid player in the game. But sometimes you have to get a fresh voice in there. Sometimes the message gets stale. And I wonder if they're really being able to really listen to what he's saying in that locker room anymore. Has he lost the locker room?
Yeah, now it's just easy to say, yes, if they play better. Yeah, he gives the old coach stuff, of course. But playing better down the stretch. And this is what I've just been watching a lot of games and just talking to people around the league. And I know the rules change and the game is a little bit different. But, man, the month of November and December, you know what it really amounts to? Who do I believe can coach up their guys regardless, get over their injuries, their younger players get better, they're not rookies in November and December, or they come up with some type of game plan a lot like New England. I know people get tired of hearing it, but
they're the standard.
They should be the standard because there's a lot of ways I use them as examples. And you know their team is going to be better in November and December. The reason why I don't believe they're contenders and everything is because I don't believe in Mike McCarthy. I don't believe he's going to take that young group of wide receivers, that young running back who fumbled Aaron Jones and build confidence in them or come up with a game plan that will get this team better down the stretch. They haven't shown it. It's either is Aaron Rodgers healthy or is Aaron Rodgers not healthy? Now, with a new defensive philosophy, a lot of younger players, young wide receivers, it's the responsibility of the coaching staff to get these guys better. Just like in Oakland, it's John Gruden's responsibility to be able to coach those guys up. Then you see Sean Payton coaching his guys up. Ron Rivera coaching his guys up. Mike Zimmer, what'd he say? This team is playing now at this point the way I envisioned them. So, Mike McCarthy, a lot of this is on you and you're right, Bart. By the time, at this point, with having Aaron Rodgers, there should be questions about should he continue with his program there in Green Bay, Nick?
A Super Bowl does not make you a great coach. That is, we've started to recognize this with players. We've started to recognize, you know what? Phillip Rivers has had a great career.
Great.
I know he's never been to the Super Bowl.
Yes.
He has been awesome. Like
he's the best out of that bunch.
Big Ben, I would argue, but sure, but fine. I think he's better than Eli, and Eli's got two of them. But regardless.
Well, this is the thing let's do this with Phillip Rivers. Mm-hmm. We know how many Super Bowls Big Ben went to with Pittsburgh. We know that first Super Bowl, they carried him.
Mm-hmm.
They carried him on their back.
If they flipped him, what would have happened? Sure.
Right. They would have went to at least three.
Yeah. They wouldn't be any worse. And so the point, I'm going to bring up Kyle Shanahan. I don't know if Kyle Shanahan will ever make a Super Bowl in San Francisco. That team is not talented. I don't know that I really believe in Jimmy Garoppolo that much, particularly coming off the ACL. But I know he's an excellent coach. I know it. I watched what he let Nick Mullins do with a week of prep. Some guys, I can just see it. I'll be honest with you. I don't know if Doug Peterson's a great coach. I know they had a great season. I know they had a great run.
Great assistants.
A great assistants. There's a lot of things going on. Now, Ron Rivera, he's been to a Super Bowl. I don't know if and when he'll go back. I know he's an excellent head coach.
Yes.
Mike McCarthy has lived off that early Super Bowl. Right. He's a Super Bowl champion coach. But now we've got nearly a decade of data post-Super Bowl to say, is he, forget being a force multiplier, helping you. Is he a force divider? Is he subtracting from the team's ability? Now, to your point about the Packers, they get Seattle, they get Atlanta, they get Chicago, the teams that could be all competing for that last wild card spot. Mm-hmm. So it is in front of them. They do, in an odd way, almost control their own destiny moving forward. But notice one thing you're not hearing out of Aaron Rodgers this year. R-E-L-A-X. He ain't telling him to relax. He felt a few years ago when he said that, listen, we're better than our record says. I'm playing as well as I've ever played. I know who we have coming up.
we'll be fine. He knows how bad they've been on the road. Mm-hmm. He knows how young they are at key spots. He knows that even if he continues to play great, it might not be enough this year.
See, I thought they were going to go all in. You talk about a team that has two first-round draft picks next year. I thought they were, like, in case of emergency, break glass, go make a move for Le'Veon or LeSean McCoy so that they can get, you know, some instant results. We saw a lot of teams go out, you know, rather the Rams, you know, who was undefeated, go out and make a move and identify that they didn't have the personnel that they needed to win the Super Bowl. When you have Aaron Rodgers, the goal is to win the Super Bowl. It's other teams that's around the league that's just trying to build their team up to be a contender, to try and improve their program, to get everybody in their locker room to buy in. When you have the best player in the game, I mean, every team says, yo, it's Super Bowl or bust. When you have Aaron Rodgers, listen, I pray to God that I can get a guy like that. You know what I mean? Hoping that you had a quarterback. Because when you have a guy like that, you have a chance because he has the ball in his hands 70 times a game. You know 50 of them are going to be dynamic plays and be the right plays. And all you got to do is make sure that you carry your weight on the defensive side.
How many teams spend all offseason having all the pieces in place and just waiting for that one quarterback?
And every team, Jenna, in the league this year that has a great quarterback is a Super Bowl contender, except for the Seahawks, who were there. Now they're staying afloat.
Right.
The Seahawks, we knew this would be a step back here. And the Packers, who might not make the playoffs. The Saints have a great quarterback, contender. Mm-hmm. Panthers, Patriots, Chargers, go down the list. Steelers, all of them are Super Bowl contenders. We're here talking, can the Packers get to 9-6-1 and steal a playoff?
And how much will they regret it if they don't put those pieces in place while they have a healthy Aaron Rodgers in his prime? All right, got to take a break. Bart, stick around. Coming up.
Thank you.
Our big change is coming to Dallas. That's next on First Things First. Back here with Bart Scott, we're going viral. Sam Darnold threw four interceptions in the Jets' loss on Sunday to Miami. But head coach Todd Bowles pointed the finger at New York's defense. And let's just say the aforementioned Bart Scott was fired up about it.
Man, this is bull crap, right? No, we got to get turnovers? Really? 3 for 16, that's a turnover. Mm-hmm. When you get them 3 and out, that's a turnover. Mm-hmm. That's getting the ball back to the offense. What are you talking about? 4 sacks, holding Osweiler 15 for 24 for 139. What the hell are you talking about?
Well,
that's the type of statement that pisses me off in the locker room as a defensive player, and we got to have a conversation. Because you start pointing fingers saying, we ain't doing good enough. You didn't do good enough. You didn't represent us good enough. You didn't prepare us good enough. You didn't make adjustments. We had questions, and you didn't give us any answers. How about that one?
What did you make of the response?
Get the hell out of here.
You knew Bart was going to be
his fired. Drawing board. Let's take his drawing board.
Bart Scott clearly wearing the same outfit.
No,
he was so fired up. He had to put the same. He didn't even change outfits.
So disrespectful.
Bart was very adamant when we told him we were playing this. He's like, listen, it looks like I'm wearing the same jacket, but actually I'm not. America, this one I can see.
He was more fired up about that than he was the Jets.
Man, man to your left on the TV right.
Jonas
was not about that life right there.
Yeah, he thought I was about to go. You know, sometimes I toe the line, but I know not to go over. I know how to toe the line, make sure, you know.
That was great television.
Well, but it's real, though, because, you know, what happens is you can separate a locker room with your statements. You got to understand, you got to assess the blame and assign the blame to who it belongs to. And it belongs to the offense. The offense didn't get it done. You talk about 13 points. They got 13 points. They gave up a defensive touchdown. Guess what? That goes on my statistics. You have a young team, and if you don't take care of that and hold everybody accountable, I thought they missed the opportunity to have a great teachable moment for Darnold, because if you put in McCown, he goes in, you can't play that same two high cover two, so he can't take shots down the field. Yeah. He's going to show you, like, look, this is how I got it done. This is how they're playing you. You got to make the adjustments, because you got to ask yourself, is the goal to develop Sam Darnold or to win football games, or do both? Because if you're saying that, listen, we're developing Sam Darnold at all costs, you lose me as a player, because I know the end goal ain't to win. And when the end goal ain't to win, then what am I putting myself at risk for? Why am I playing through injury when we're just trying to develop? He can develop without me. He can, but what happens is, sometimes you forget that you can learn from being on the bench sometimes, too. It's not saying that you can't start him the next week.
Right.
But you go back and he learns from the sideline.
Right.
Right? He's not ready to do that yet. And teams are starting to catch up because it's film out there. Mm-hmm. So now they're making adjustments. And the adjustment is two high safeties. Let's make this kid throw the ball into tight windows.
Yeah.
He's not using his athleticism. They're playing with, two deep linebackers, no spies. Let's go to the Cowboys. Speaking about a train wreck.
Makes sense. That's great. It was a great 10-minute explanation. Thank you for that.
We'll stay gameplay.
I get paid. Amari Cooper making his debut for the Cowboys last night. He'd get on the board early. Dak Prescott finding him in the end zone for the 4-yard TD. Later, first quarter, Dak tries to find Cooper again because you have him. Why not use him? But this one's intercepted by Kevin Byard. Dak wasn't happy. Byard surely was. Midfield in the star. So little Terrell Owens inspiration. This would continue to get ugly for Dallas. Third quarter, game tied at 14. Dak fumbles, recovered by the Titans. They score in the next possession. It is now 21-14. And then finally, Marcus Mariota runs it in with less than 5 minutes to go. That seals the win. The Cowboys lose 28-14. They are now 3-5 on the year. Jason Garrett, big unhappy. Here's Dak Prescott after the game.
It's disappointing. I mean, we just didn't get the job done. We all got to do better, and it starts with me. It starts with me first all the way throughout this whole team. So, I mean, very disappointed, as you said, coming off the bye week. Cleaned things up. Felt good going into this one. And as to come out with this loss to be 3-5 is very disappointing.
And we didn't see this coming. That's all the more reason, because we did have a lot of time to prepare and had a lot of time to get ready and made some changes that we thought we could make and give us a better shot than this. So this is quite if you will, it's a step back for us. The turnover, the fumble, after the last game we had, the two fumbles, I'm sure we'd all like to have back. Tonight's game did not, I emphasize, impact my future look at Dak Prescott.
It was almost as if Jerry held court and then was like, but I have more to say, so let's all reconvene, and then I'm going to say even more. How about Jerry Jones? We had time to prepare. We made changes, and we still came up short.
That means you're not that good.
Well, apparently. I was going to say, what went wrong for the Cowboys last night?
I mean, it's Dak Prescott, right, and his decision-making. Because, like I said, when the quarterback, you have a quarterback, and why he's the most important piece is because he has the ball. So he has the fate of his team in his hands more than anybody else on the team. And they're trying to make Dak what he's not. And that's an elite quarterback. He's a middle-of-the-road quarterback. You know, and, you know, Marcus Mariota is a much better quarterback with a higher ceiling than him, right? Stronger arm, better decision-making, and more athletic. Dak Prescott, you look at that, he's trying to force the ball into double coverage. Don't understand
it's
that how...
It's a terrible decision.
Right, and then and especially after them getting the turnovers and then not being able to capitalize on. They had an opportunity to go up 14-0, which makes that game
Mark,
totally
that was
different.
Second down right there, right?
Second.
That was not like a game-winning situation
that
where he's got to be able to throw it and everything.
He threw that like it was fourth down. Like, I've got to throw it somewhere. I can't take a sack. It's second down.
Yeah, and they doubled down, right? They doubled down. When you went out and you give up your first-round draft pick, you're doubling down saying that this team is ready to make a run right now. And they keep trying to put all the pieces around Dak Prescott. He's not the type of quarterback that can elevate people around him. Mm-hmm. And you look at him, when I was listening to Witten, and he was saying, well, you know, back when they had Emmitt Smith and it was the big play action, when you got the best running back, the most physically pounding running back, when you got a guy down there that you got to make business decisions about, when you say, do I want to stand on these train tracks? Do I want to be embarrassed? You better come downhill as a linebacker. So that means play action is going to be heavy. That means you can affect, you know, safeties, move linebackers with play action, but you don't believe in Dak Prescott because he can't make the throws down the field accurately.
Right.
He doesn't take chances. You know, and you can't win like that. So now you got to ask yourself in the offseason, how much money am I paying Dak Prescott? Are you married to him, or do you go out and look for one of these retreads if a Joe Flacco or somebody's available out there? Because you don't have a first-round draft pick, so now you can't even improve in that way.
The biggest problem in Dallas is how they're trying to evolve their offense. That offense is not effective. The model that they're trying to run, it doesn't exist in it. Jacksonville, they tried to run it too. We're going to play power football. They got a great offensive line, they think. We're going to overpower people. No, you can't do that. And what you talked about is them trying to think that Dak is an elite quarterback. Dak's not going to be an elite passer of the football, not at this point in his career. And that's my concern, is that this model, and even though Witten in the game, he talked about Emmitt Smith and him. Listen, there ain't no Emmitt Smiths in the NFL. All right? That Emmitt Smith, his first Cowboy game, Michael Irvin and him were sitting there in Bedland, and Michael Irvin asked him, man, how good you think you can be? And Emmitt Smith said, I'm going to be the greatest running back that ever. So, listen, there are people not born that think that way, all right? That was a special.
It's the all-time leading rusher in NFL history.
But let me tell you what. Barry Sanders is the best back. Let's just end that discussion.
Okay, whatever.
But let me tell you about what they need to do. And you can't have a football team like they have now. All right? Because Emmitt Smith, in those days, they threw the football, Jenna, to set up the run. They didn't come out try to overpower you. They set you up with Michael Irvin, yep. Jay Novacek.
Alvin Harper.
And they had an elite all-time great in Troy Aikman. Dak Prescott is not that. So, to me, they're trying to play a style that I don't believe that the team can adapt to and or that Dak can be successful at.
And I'm old enough to remember the Dallas Cowboys are going to get Dak involved more in the running game. Yeah, that lasted a few weeks.
RPOs,
all that stuff. That was fun. Okay, two carries.
That was last month.
That was last month. That wasn't last year. That was last month. Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember, oh, we think we've got a dominant defense. You let the Titans go 11 of 14 on third downs. Third and 8, pick it up. Third and 9, pick it up. Third and 10, pick it up. And I'm old enough to remember Dak Prescott's biggest skill was taking care of the football. Yep. Yes. In the last 24 games, he has multiple turnovers in 10 of them. Jameis Winston, DeShone Kizer, Derek Carr, Dak Prescott, the only quarterbacks to have 10 multi-turnover games in the last season and a half. So who are you? In the first quarter, it looked like exactly who we thought you would be at your best. A heavy dose of Zeke. Zeke had 10 for 75 in the first quarter as far as running and catching. The rest of the game, 11 for 37. You forced two turnovers in the first quarter. The rest of the game, none, and you commit one of your own. Like, what? Who are you? Who are you as a football team? What do you do great as a
identity,
football team?
Right?
Yes. Here's what I don't understand. Both of you, every single person that has sat in this chair, just about every analyst, most Dallas Cowboys fans, have all come out here and said, hey, Dak Prescott, nice guy, not the best quarterback, not the guy that's going to lead you forward, except for some reason Jerry Jones, who
because
wants it
decision.
So badly. Right, but it feels like he's, what is it, cutting off his nose to spite his face, which seems like what he's doing. I'll give up a first-round pick. I'll give you whatever you need to. I'll pay whoever you need to pay.
Man,
we need to
give up. Jerry Jones gave up his firstborn son for adoption because he had a new, better son.
That's exactly what he did with Tony Romo, yes.
No, that's my point.
That's
and when you do that, that new, better son better be the golden child.
Right.
You cannot give up Tony Romo, who could still be playing in the NFL in my eyes. Yep. Tony Romo
in
the new NFL?
Absolutely.
Would be as good as he'd ever been. And you give up on him. He wanted to keep playing. And you said, you're going to have to play somewhere else, man.
Yep.
Go do television. And credit to Tony, he's been great at television. Because of number 4. You can't then, 2 years later, be like, oh, I screwed that up.
Yep.
Tony, will you come back?
So what does it look like? You're going to pay him?
He doubled down. And then if you pay him, you're really going to cripple your franchise, because now you got to address, are you going to pay DeMarcus Lawrence
and
as well?
About Zeke.
Right, exactly. So you put all this equity in this offensive line, but you don't have somebody that can really control the controls at a master level. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that at best I think is more like a Nick Foles. He's a guy that needs to be a system quarterback. You have to build around his strengths. You have to do a lot of the things that he did in college, and you have to simplify the offense where he's basically taking shots or you defining his reads for him.
I do believe that, but I'm not going to put all the blame on Dak. Because all day today, people are supposed to be experts. They're going to be blaming him. They're going to be blaming. They don't play good complementary football. The defense was playing excellent earlier, created those turnovers for him. They had to be able to get points. But watch the play action on the interception. We're going to blame Dak for not throwing the ball away. Watch the offensive line. That's play action. They're dropping back like it's a drop back. Mm-hmm. So they don't even sell the play action that would allow the defenders to come up. The sack where Dak got in problem, the defensive end got chipped by Zeke. The offensive lineman didn't think that he had to stay inside. He thought he was head up, they had to block him. So they are not complimenting each other. So as a team, I just don't believe it's fair to point out the quarterback, and because collectively as a team, they're not playing championship football. And you can see it, but it's in the product. This is not a playoff team. As much as we talk about them, as much as we want them to be, you are what your record is, all right? And they are not a good football team. That's why they sit at 3-5.
All right, Bart, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Probably in the same outfit, right? Yeah, probably. Coming up, should we finally
see... Give me the tux.
Listen, I think it looks good all the days that you wear it. Could we finally see Dez on the field this year? That's next on First Things First. Sunday, a great slate of NFL action highlighted by Drew Brees and the Saints taking on Andy Dalton and the Bengals. It is all on Fox and the Fox Sports app. You could check your local listings for the game in your area. What's up, C?
He's making fun of me because I sit funny.
I'm trying to see how the guy
he's
sits
just making
on
fun of me.
With his leg up
that's
under
all
him, on his feet
he's
and everything.
Like a teenager.
A grown man.
Young, spry grown man. How y'all doing?
What are you doing? Let's keep the show
going. Look at you, uncomfortable. Kind of like it. Thanks. We'll get to Dez Bryant and the Saints in a second. But first, MNF, Monday Night Football. Cowboys' Allen Hurns fakes out Malcolm Butler before scoring on the 23-yard touchdown.
A little slant and go right here. A little stick route, stick head nod.
It's a good route by Allen Hurns.
Oh, Butler, come on, baby. They've been doing this a lot this year, man. He's had a bad year. They spent a lot of money. $60 million.
Oh, 50. Kyrie Irving watched the acrobatic reverse layup.
Kyrie, 31 last night. Now they lost. Jamal Murray was outstanding. But Kyrie now, third time in four games, he has been tremendous. Shout out to Kyrie Irving for getting that shave, getting that shower, and getting back to himself.
I don't think the shower was a part of it.
Gordon Hayward now is the thing with the Celtics. The person with the Celtics, they got to figure out exactly what his role is going to be post-injury.
Yeah, he's going to have some struggles with that leg coming back. I think up to the All-Star game. After the All-Star game, going to be fresh.
Okay.
Knicks and Bulls and Alonzo Trier with a great chase-down block on Zach LaVine.
Trier's been a surprising good story this year, but not as surprising as Zach LaVine, who right now, I believe, is top 10 in the Eastern Conference in scoring, a guy who's playing like an All-Star, and all of a sudden that Jimmy Butler trade that everyone thought the Bulls got fleeced in is looking better and better for them as time goes on.
Sure has been a pleasant surprise, though, for the Knicks. Absolutely. Coming off their bench.
All right, moving on to NFL players who haven't played a down this season. Let's talk Dez Bryant, that guy who used to play for the Cowboys, that guy who turned down deals from the Ravens and Browns, and that guy who has spent most of this season on Twitter. Well, that guy reportedly will work out with the Saints this week, along with receivers Brandon Marshall and Kamar Aiken. All right, CeCe, why would the Saints want to bring in a guy like Dez into what appears to be a well-functioning and successful locker room for New Orleans at this point?
Because outside of Michael Thomas, just as far as wide receivers, they're not as deep as they have been. And Teddy Ginn placed on the injured reserve, they're definitely going to miss him because he had a niche in that offense. Now, the guys that they're looking at, they wouldn't be able to replace the speed. But Sean Payton is a creative coach. If he gets talented wide receivers, they will be productive. And it's hard to match the productivity that Sean Payton gets out of guys. So he's looking for veteran guys who would understand and be able to do a certain role. And, man, you got Drew Brees almost completing 80% of the passes. Man, send me a workout invitation. Goodness. I mean, all you got to do is just get how open? This much. Because Drew Brees, man, is playing at an all-time high. So I like the fact that Sean Payton's going to bring him in and work him out. Also, Sean Payton can handle the personality. Drew Brees is such a great leader in that locker room. It would be a great fit. I love to see Dez Bryant be able to finish with a contender.
Because Drew Brees is so accurate, and because if you don't have to get a ton of separation, the name I'd be interested they're bringing into workouts, Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall played this year. Brandon Marshall, I think, had 11 catches in his very brief time with Seattle this year. Brandon Marshall, we know, is in football shape. And Brandon Marshall, we also know, in this new Brandon Marshall 2.0 we've seen over the last 5 years after he got his mental health stuff squared away, is a really good locker room guy. I think things are going too well in New Orleans to add this X factor, to add this, the idea that you're going to bring in this,
So it'll be a distraction.
Yeah, I don't know if it might be a distraction, but it certainly adds something to the recipe that we could throw the whole thing off, right?
Last week, they traded Mickey Loomis and
they traded for Eli Apple?
Mickey Loomis and Sean Payton have had a history of dealing with players and everything, so I don't see the same thing as you. I wouldn't be worried. Eli Apple, supposedly, him and Collins, they had a falling out in the locker room. They said he was a bad locker room guy. So when you have a strong personality as a coach who trusts his ability, I believe in Sean Payton. Also, Dez Bryant is not the same Dez Bryant who was on the Cowboys last year. After an offseason of humility, after having a couple small contract offers, I'm sure Dez Bryant is in a different place mentally than he's been at since he's been in pro football.
Okay, so that would have been my concern. My other concern would be Dez Bryant has no experience in the NFL, not as the number one guy. And he obviously...
Everywhere he went, no one was looking for him to be the number one guy. Baltimore was not him being the number one guy. Cleveland, he wasn't going to be the number one guy.
And he didn't sign any of those places. The places that I thought kind of made sense for him was a place like San Francisco that you had mentioned where he would have been the number one guy. Maybe the Jets where he potentially could have been the number one guy.
Okay, well, let's look at it from a different perspective then. Where would you want him to work out? If he can't work out in New Orleans, where can he work out? Where can he play?
No, see, from Dez's perspective, I think it'd be great. I'm talking about if I'm the Saints. If I'm the Saints.
The Saints just brought in Eli Apple. Like, they don't have enough talented wide receivers to make it through a playoff run. They got 7 wins in a row.
But
Sean Payton is from the Bill Parcells tree. Man, he can handle dudes, man. You see Michael Thomas come up and apologize after the cell phone? Yeah, Sean Payton is not that kind of guy, man. I believe in Sean Payton. Sean Payton can handle wide receivers.
Dez Bryant is different than Eli Apple. People aren't walking up and down. Reporters aren't going to walk up and down that locker room asking everyone, what's it going to be like to bring Eli Apple in here? You know, how much is this going to take away with Dez here? Are you worried about what Dez is going to do? And when you break it down for a team that's playing so well with so few problems or distractions, even something small as tilting the axis a little with where reporters are going to be, that doesn't alarm you at all.
Sean Payton is trying to win a Super Bowl. And I got confidence in Sean Payton's ability. I wouldn't be as concerned about it. I wouldn't be as concerned, all right? They're on a roll. They got great leadership there. Mickey Loomis and how they pick players there, they do it for a certain reason. If you're trying to pick up, New England picked up Josh Gordon. Ain't nobody had no problem with that. Ain't nobody said nothing about that. Like, what about not being able to depend on your teammate? So these guys, when they go to in certain situations, all right, they are trying to fit in. Let's not think that Dez Bryant wouldn't fit in New Orleans for some type of reason that we don't know.
Okay, what about the reasons we do know quickly? Football-wise, would he be a good addition to this team?
They don't have enough depth at wide receiver.
Right now, that Tre'Quan Smith, the young guy who's played relatively well, but I think has 12 catches on the year. He's a big play guy.
You cannot depend on him coming down the stretch. He has gotten better. They do believe he has big-time talent. But Dez Bryant as your third or fourth receiver? Absolutely. Let's not get crazy.
Right now,
Michael
Thomas, we know, has 70 catches. Second most catches, Alvin Kamara. He's a running back. Third most catches is Benjamin Watson, who is, best I checked, your age. And so, like,
that was insulting. I'm going to cut you off and break right now. 34-year-old wide receivers are not bad.
He's
coming
a tight
up,
end. He's 37.
Has Jerry Jones finally had enough with Jason Garrett? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're going viral. Titan safety Kevin Byard channeled his inner Terrell Owens last night by celebrating his interception on the Cowboys midfield star. And guess who took notice? T.O. himself, tweeting hashtag no bigger fan than me, of course, in reference to his celebration 18 years ago.
I cannot believe this didn't get flagged.
This was
shocking to me. Listen, I don't like the taunting penalties, but this was the definition of taunting. Like, this was damn near inciting a football riot. He knew, he said after the game, I knew I was going to get hit for doing it. The refs were like, I like it, NFL.
Yeah, I guess the refs haven't been watching too much NFL history and everything. Didn't kind of realize. And the defensive players, when they get a turnover, they kind of run to the other end through this year. And last year they started
like
taking
pictures,
these group photos and everything. They lost the moment right there. I knew exactly what he was doing.
I like it a lot. Jason Witten says you're allowed to celebrate once you've been in the league 7 to 8 years and you average 7 or 8 interceptions a year. Said he's all for celebrating.
Let me tell you something. Jason Witten need to be able to celebrate after you've called a full game NFL. See, I call 2 games, so even I ain't on that corner. Yeah, after I get 16 games under my
season.
Belt, I'm getting ready to really let my tail feather out.
Just okay. Oh, wow. My goodness.
It's happening.
Okay.
Time for
Where'd
stories to start your morning.
Where'd you get all that hair from? Man, he grew a lot of hair since he quit playing football.
Urlacher.
You see the
you okay?
The end of the Nuggets Celtics game last night. Jamal Murray, who had 48, tried to make it 51. His time expired. Kyrie was not on board with that plan, so let's watch it again. Takes the ball.
So Jamal Murray's waiting for the time to expire.
And he's going
to
just sort of
I want a 50-piece.
Kyrie wants no part of it.
Kyrie says, miss me with that.
I honestly had that line ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, what do you make of it, Nick?
Listen, I don't blame either guy here. I don't blame Jamal Murray, who's trying to make his name in this league, scoring 50 points in an NBA game is an enormous accomplishment. We talked about your brother, who had an excellent career almost a decade. Career high 42, did it 3 separate times.
Yeah.
Like, guys remember what their career highs are. Guys remember if they ever got to 50. Jamal Murray wanted to get to 50. He was doing it in kind of a Bush League way. So Kyrie said, throw the ball into the stands. We lost, and you're taking a little cheap shot at the end.
It's kind of one of those unwritten rules in the NBA. I understand. Now, I wouldn't have been mad after the game. I didn't think it required throwing the ball in the stands and everything, because there was a chance, Kyrie, to really get mad, like during the game. What about when he had 25? I'm getting ready to get pissed. What about when he had 30? 35. That would be a time to be upset. Now, when you get past 40, Jen, I'm just going to tell you, that's my threshold. I'm done. Dude have 48 on y'all.
Yeah.
All right, do something about it, bro.
All right, moving on to the NFL, where the Ravens.
I'll tell you a little league football coach was upset at me, thought I was running up the score on him.
Okay.
The Ravens have lost four of their last five. Questions now over whether it's time to move on from quarterback Joe Flacco. John Harbaugh says we're rolling right now with what we got at the quarterback position. CC's still telling the story, so we should just hear it. You choose, Nick. You want to hear that one, or is this the right move?
Well, you want to see? Go ahead.
It's the right move. I mean, Joe Flacco, if you're not a playoff team, he's in the last year of his contract. Why'd you draft Lamar? Right. Just to be a utility?
But you wouldn't go to Lamar yet, right? Give Flacco a few more weeks.
Yeah, give him a couple more weeks.
Absolutely.
The head coach believes in him, yep. So I still stay with him. And they're still mathematically the hunt. They got the number one defense. They have a chance to win every game.
And so, but I think they won't be viable come around Thanksgiving. And then the last quarter of the season, I go to Lamar Jackson. Post week one, so in every game since week one, Joe Flacco was 9 touchdowns, 6 picks, a sub-80 quarterback rating. In 2018 NFL, that's impossibly bad. Your defense up until last few weeks had been very good, and you're still just trying to find ways to win games. You got to try to give your team a jolt. There's a reason you took Lamar in the first round.
You know who's not going to Lamar? Joe Flacco when he's wide open in the end zone.
No. Not throwing
The happiest of times in Green Bay as we move on. They're coming off a loss to a Patriots team without Sony Michel or Rob Gronkowski, and their record now 3-4-1, third place in that division. Head coach Mike McCarthy admitted that if the team has any shot at the playoffs, they have to play their best football down the stretch. Thank you, Captain Obvious. CC, do you believe Rodgers and the Packers can make a playoff push with who they have right now?
I believe Aaron Rodgers can make a playoff push, but what I don't believe in the staff. I believe Aaron Rodgers can go on a run, win 2-3 games in a row. I'm like, wow, that's really not a lot of confidence. Good coaching staffs, they take you to 3, 4, 5 games in a row. And that's what the Packers would have to do. That wouldn't be my expectations. They haven't done it in the past. They got some good young players. But I don't believe in the staff that they're going to get them better in the month of November and December.
And Rodgers is not telling everybody to relax like in years, like a few years ago when they then reeled off, I think it was 6 straight to finish the year and make the playoffs. Like, he knows this team right now is young, not as talented, not as good on either side of the ball. What they do have going for them is this. If you're talking about fighting for the last wild card spot in the NFC, the teams in that hunt, Seattle, Atlanta, Chicago, or Minnesota, they get to play all of them. So they do get a chance to beat those teams and move up in the standings. But a team that hasn't won a road game since December 10th of last year, we really think they're going to go 7-1 down the stretch is what
they're
have to do.
They're half game out of last place in their division.
Yeah.
All right, finally, people are starting to jockey for the opportunity to coach Baker Mayfield. Former Cardinals coach Bruce Arians said he would come out of retirement to coach the Browns. What do we think about this? See, how much will the next head coach impact the development of Baker Mayfield?
It becomes important, but I don't believe that the Browns, you can fall into a trap and think that this franchise, because of Baker Mayfield, that they need an offensive coach. I think that that's what the media attention, that's what the fans, but is that really the best coach for the Browns? To me, I don't think you need an offensive coach to get the best out of Baker Mayfield. I believe you can get a great offensive coordinator. I would go for the best coach because they got some good defensive personnel too. This just is valuable and has to be developed just like the offensive talent. Let's look in that division. Look at the coaches. Cincinnati, Marvin Lewis. What does he coach?
Defensive coach.
Oh, okay. Harbaugh. He's the specialty item, but he's a special teams coach. Mm-hmm. And Mike Tomlin, what's his specialty? Defense. So the defensive coaches have done well in that division. And it's a rough, rugged division. Weather plays a part. So I don't believe that you just fall into the trap that, oh, I got to hire an offensive mind just because Sean McVay. Sean McVay is 32. Have we ever seen Sean McVay before?
No.
Maybe Shanahan. Maybe the first Shanahan before Kyle, his dad.
Sure.
Remember, when he was that age, he was one of those bright, young minds and everything. But, man, Sean McVay's just aren't out there running up and down the street. So I just think people are looking at this the wrong way, thinking that, oh, I got to get an offensive coach for Baker Mayfield. I believe in Bruce Arians' coaching ability, but I don't know if his style, and that's throwing the ball deep down the field in this new NFL, is the best thing for Baker Mayfield or a young quarterback trying to be successful in the league.
If they are going to go with an offensive coach, I'll tell you a guy as far as getting the most out of that defense, I would look to his defensive coordinator, and that's a guy I think is going to be available here in a few weeks, and that's Todd Bowles. I think if you are whomever, whatever position you go with as far as the head coach, offensive-minded head coach or defensive-minded head coach, the coordinator on the opposite side of the ball becomes critical. Now, I don't know who the hot up-and-coming coordinators are. I know who the coordinators who could become head coaches are, but the guys who are about ready to become coordinators on the offensive side that the Browns could hire, those are names I'm not as familiar with. But what I know is this. The Browns, the most important decision they've made in the last decade was drafting Baker Mayfield. The next most important decision they're going to make is who's the next head coach. Because whomever they choose, they need and Baker needs so desperately for them to not be discussing a head coaching change again for the life of not only his rookie contract, but into his second contract. Because it is so hard to be successful in this league if you're going through different head coaches, different coordinators, different systems, no matter how talented the player is.
Owner Jimmy Haslam doesn't have
that. Doesn't have a track record.
But
he's never had a track record of having the quarterback. One of the things that gets coaches and GMs fired is not having the quarterback. I think now he has the quarterback, you got to find the right marriage with the head coach.
I think it becomes important the relationship Dorsey has with whoever this head coach is. I believe if Mike McCarthy becomes available, because Dorsey has some experience with him in this position, what I've learned is sometimes it's not who's best, it's who they are familiar with and who they're comfortable with. And I believe that Dorsey, that relationship becomes important, I believe, because he's the one selected Baker. He'll get the right coach for him, and he might not be an offensive coach.
All right, speaking of coaches, let's get back to the Cowboys. They dropped an ugly one to the Titans last night. The offense only scored 14. Quarterback Dak Prescott turned the ball over twice, and Dallas now finds themselves two games back in the division. So we're good? Well, sort of, according to Jerry Jones. Despite the 3-5 record, Jerry says he has no plans to fire Jason Garrett. CC, should Jerry be considering a coaching change?
No, absolutely not. It wouldn't help the team at all. They're not out of the playoff hunt at 3-5. They could flip it around and easily go 6-2, be at 9-7. They could get hot and be 7-1. So no, I wouldn't fire the coach, and there's no succession plan. How do you help your team? How do you help the offensive line that's underimproving by changing the head coach? How do you help a defense that couldn't get off the field on third down by changing the head coach? All right. How do you help the quarterback? You think Dak Prescott gets better by you firing Jason Garrett? No, he doesn't. You know, so I would play out the string until the end of the season. At the end of the season, I believe that he's been there long enough. And with the lack of overall playoff success or playoff appearances, I believe that will, in its totality, be enough to be able to evaluate the quarterback. I mean, the quarterback and the head coach, and to be able to move on in either direction. Because I'm not stuck with the quarterback. All right. I ain't stuck with the quarterback. I haven't made up my mind like Jerry Jones has.
Right.
And I don't believe it would not help his growth by releasing the quarterback, Jason Garrett, for the last 8 games of the season.
Right. Listen, at this point, I think it's more likely than not that the Dallas Cowboys have a new head coach to start next season. But I also think it's very unlikely they fire their coach during the season, because they don't have Norv Turner on the staff. They don't have Wade Phillips on the staff. They don't have a guy who has head coaching experience as a coordinator. They have Marinelli.
Yeah,
They could go to Rod Marinelli in that spot, I suppose. But a guy who has had any success as a head coach in the NFL on the staff. Like, I don't think that it is likely they make a midseason change. Now, it should be noted that 8 years ago yesterday, Jerry Jones gave a vote of confidence to Wade Phillips that he's going to finish out the year, and 3 days later fired him. So it's not off the board, but I think the most important point you made, C, is about you're not married to Dak Prescott, but Jerry seems to be. And if he is married to the quarterback,
he has to continue to find different reasons that the quarterback's not succeeding that isn't the fault of the quarterback. Like, we have seen it. Last year was the Zeke suspension. This year it was not having a number one option, so they trade for Amari Cooper. It was the offensive line wasn't playing well enough, so they fire the offensive line coach. You are going to find a lot of different scapegoats before you get to the quarterback if the man in charge, the only person whose opinion actually matters, has decided we have our quarterback. If he's not succeeding, it's everyone's fault but his.
Well, how much of Dak's lack of success, if you will, or lack of growth, is because of Jason Garrett? Is it Jason Garrett's job? Is he that tied into Dak Prescott that he's responsible for how well Dak Prescott plays or develops?
This is the problem here, is when a player has success as a rookie, we automatically just put something on that. Oh, a guy comes into the NFL. Oh, this guy's going to be successful. That don't mean that. I mean, he had a successful season. There's a lot of players that had one season, two seasons, three seasons in the NFL. But there's not a whole lot that put together 5 to 10 seasons. That's the difference in this league, and you see in the players. That's when you see, oh, man, is this guy a good quarterback? Well, how long is he going to be able to do this? And that's the difference between the good and the great in this league. And just because you have success initially does not mean long-term success. And it does not mean to me, Jason Garrett, his influence on Scott Linehan and them not growing the offensive system, that is his responsibility. Because when Jason Witten decides to retire, when they decide not to bring back Dez Bryant, what was their plan? What type of team were they going to be? What was their change-up pitch? Because we know we're going to hand it to Zeke 20 times. Are we going to develop Zeke as a pass catcher out of the backfield? Because Dallas is one of the few teams in the NFL that they do not have a specialist, a small guy who comes out of the backfield and be a mismatch against linebackers and safeties. They don't play that way. Why? Everyone else is doing it because it hasn't been developed. So that part, that is Scott Linehan's fault. That is Jason Garrett's fault. When they knew the team that they had and they did not develop these other things of how they're going to move the football, they have no sideline passing game. All these teams throwing bubble screens and working things off of that, they don't do that. Why? That is their responsibility. They did not develop that. So for me, they're responsible for it. And ultimately, that's the reason why Jason Garrett will lose his job as the Dallas Cowboys head coach.
And listen, though, Jason Garrett obviously does not have playoff success at a high level or really at any level on his resume. The thing he has on his resume is he took over the Cowboys in 2011. That was his first full season. Since then, only the Patriots and Steelers have it. Zero losing seasons. The Cowboys just have one. There's only been 1 year under Jason Garrett. They were under 500. That's the year Romo broke his collarbone early and missed the final 11 games of the year. They've never bottomed out. If 3-5 turns into 6-10, if they double up what they did in the first half and the second half, I don't see how he survives it. Like, he can finish the year probably because I don't expect them to change during the season. But the one thing Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett have been able to hang their hat on is we've never been bad. We maybe have been mediocre. Mm-hmm. We've maybe gotten more coverage than our record would deserve, but we've never bottomed out except for the 1 year we lost our quarterback and we had to throw Brandon Weeden out there. If they if they have a 5-6 win season this year with a healthy Zeke, with that defense, then it's hard to hold anyone accountable other than the coach and the quarterback.
It's a huge indictment. 2016, they're the best in the league, 13-3. I knew they'd come back to the pack. 2017, 10-6. Mm-hmm. They win 6 or 7 games with this young, talented crew that they have. Oh, someone's going to lose their job. Jerry has one that only way he can lose it is by dying. So someone else is going to lose their job besides the offensive line coach who got his pink slip last week.
It's a nice position to be in. The only way to lose your job is muerte. Coming up, was losing to the Saints exactly what the Rams needed? One of their players seems to think so. Next on First Things First. Thursday Night Football returns this week with a battle of NFL heavyweights as Cam Newton, Christian McCaffrey, and the Panthers battle Big Ben, Antonio Brown, and the Steelers. It all starts 7:30 Eastern on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video. We are looking forward to that one.
It's a great game. Great game. Cannot wait for it.
All right, back here with Bart Scott. Little good news for the Rams. They had no longer have to worry about remaining undefeated. Saints took care of that on Sunday, handing them their first loss in the year. It was a tough day for that Rams secondary, especially for Marcus Peters, surrendering 211 yards and the game-sealing touchdown as he attempted to cover Michael Thomas. Peters took responsibility, though, for his play after the game.
Third down and six, man. Got up the line. He just beat me off the line. Look back, try to make a play on the ball. It happens like that in football.
Were you trying to communicate something to teammates right before that?
Oh, man. It happens like that in football. We were just trying to get a line, and we were trying to get something out, and it just happened like that, man. I got beat. You know, communication, regardless of all that, I got beat. Once the play starts, man, you got to go out there and you got to compete, man. And I did, and they got off, and they got a 72-yard.
This is the first loss for you guys this season. Mm-hmm. Did you guys think, I mean, maybe this day would come, or now that it's here, what's it like?
Nah, man. How good this team is, we don't ever think this day would come because we fight so hard together. We know all three phases we're going to go out there and compete. That's why we came back at the end of the game. That just shows just how tough we are, how together we are. But, nah, man, it's going to actually be a good thing for us, man. We get to go back to work and we get to just have an extra little hunger edge, you know, coming off the loss.
Lies.
I was just going to ask if you believe him. Why?
No, he's a liar. First of all, he was trying to communicate the bunch concept, right? They have 4 over 3. So he's trying to say, listen, when he points up to the sky, he's telling the safety that, listen, I'm going to take outside leverage and then you write this down. When you run it, so you take away the post, I'll take away the corner route. See, you see two guys on the short route? That means that he was expecting help and he was getting ready to slice outside so he can take the corner route away and the safety's supposed to be over the top. You know, that's what that means. That's sky. You know, because I played in a 3-4, so I understand the concepts and Wade Phillips and what he tries to do. You know, but, you know, Peters is like one of these gamblers, and he's been that his entire career. First of all, he did a bad job because you got to press the point, especially against a big guy, Michael Thomas, because you want guys on different levels. You can't get guys, you know, up on the safety because they would have sent too vertical, then they would have too many people up on the safety. But, you know, the same thing make you laugh, make you cry. And I am a believer that they needed to lose a game, but not this game, because this was a game opportunity to send a message to show that they can come. And for their psyche, too, that they can come from
go
the West
the
Coast
road.
And come from the West Coast, which they may have to do in the playoffs and have confidence that they can go into a hostile environment. You know, but, you know, what happened is you think about what happened just a week before with Green Bay. You know, if Ty Montgomery don't go outlaw, then probably, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to come out and score and win that football game. And what happens is when you are winning, the things that can make you lose, you sweep under the rug. When you lose, then everything that can make you, when you lose in everything that you do, you have to analyze and assess.
I think NFL players, and Bart's right about that, when you lose, they're far more critical of every little mistake that you make. When you're winning, because the end result is what we're going to work hard as we can to try to win this game. So you don't coach yourself. You're not as critical. Now, only the great players are able to create that in their mind that all the mistakes are big mistakes. Like, and that's how you're able to keep a level playing every week, that you're critical of yourself. I had a pact with my wide receiver coach that he knew that he could, if the ball touched one of my hands, he knew he could mark me negative.
As a drop.
Now, I might say something in the meeting, but he knew that the standard that him and I were going to talk about and how he was going to coach me was going to be different. I believe the Rams can learn from this because they realize our run defense is still not shored up. Now, this is the first time Ndamukong Suh has been able to play inside with Aaron Donald because they have now someone on the outside. Wow. So now they have 8 games to be able to continue to work on that. And their nickel defense, their linebackers and their safeties in coverage, they are not good. So I just believe that Wade Phillips will look at situations of how can I shore up my third down? They'll use these last 8 games in case they get into this matchup, because I believe it's just as critical to know what your weaknesses are. Yeah. And the Saints exploited the weaknesses of the Rams defense.
And right now, as good as the Rams are, their defensive numbers are misleading because they have played 4 games against barely NFL-level quarterbacks. In C.J. Beathard, Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, and the first game of the year, Derek Carr, where he was just awful. Then they played 5 games against legit and the type of quarterbacks you're going to have to play in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Phillip Rivers, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. Those are all star quarterbacks, the guys you'll have to play in the postseason. In those 5 games, they're giving up a 120 passer rating. They've forced 1 turnover. They're giving up 50% of third down. Mm-hmm. So the numbers are inflated because they have dominated the bad quarterbacks. Right. There aren't going to be any bad quarterbacks in the postseason.
They're flawed defense, too, because we talk about, you know, they can't stop the run. You look at Mark Barron. He's a converted safety because he couldn't play at a high level there. So now you look at, you know, what the Saints did. We're going to run the ball in between the tackles because we know he can't anchor, and they try to cover him up with the inside tackles, but you can't because there's always an opportunity to get somebody up to the second level. And once you do that, And once you went on first down, it's hard to recover from.
Why did they move Mark Barron, Bart, from safety to linebacker?
Because he couldn't play dead in the country wrestling.
Couldn't cover anybody.
Couldn't cover nobody. Couldn't get off the hashes.
Yes.
That's such a good line. I have to.
I got a lot of them. Just keep inviting me back.
Wow, that was good. So, listen, what's the one thing we said might hold the Saints back? Maybe their defense, if we were going to. And so now we said, what's the one thing that could possibly hold the Rams back? Maybe their defense. Is there not no longer a complete team in this league that you could look at and say offense, defense, special teams? Because it was the Rams for a while. That's the most complete team in the NFL.
I think it is the Saints, because you have to ask yourself, if you're going to be a defense, you got to do something good. And what they do good is stop the run. You look at Todd Gurley. He wasn't able to really, you know, get some of those, you know, big plays, and they were able to keep him under control. You know, that's an explosive offense. You know, they're not good as far as being on the outside.
You're not worried about pass coverage against some of these good quarterbacks?
Well, I do, but they have the ability on the other side to generate points. When you can generate points, your offense is your defense. But at least they can stop the run and try and make a team one-dimensional and stop the team in a light box.
This is why, it's a team we haven't talked about much the last month. This is why the Minnesota Vikings should be very optimistic about what they can do the second half of the year. They're the only team to me, when I talk about the best teams in football in the NFC, that has a chance to be very good on offense and elite on defense. I think the Rams can be good on defense and awesome on offense. I know the Saints can be amazing on offense and good on defense. The Vikings are the only team with the personnel to be what you're talking about, the well-rounded team. We know over in the AFC, Kansas City's going to be all offense, just offense, try to force a turnover
maybe
and get a stop or two.
Back, they can be a little different.
If
you know, you've never been to the playoffs, but CeCe has before. You have to understand that what you have to pack in the playoffs is your defense and your running game, because you're going to be dealing with different elements.
You got to
be able, you got to be able to salt the game away, because every game usually comes down to one possession. And it's, can you convert fourth and one, or can you or can you pick up fourth and one? I think I said the same thing. Can you stop fourth and one, or can you convert fourth and one? And that's really what it comes down to. That's why, you know, all the teams I was a part of, no matter how great the other offenses were, you know, great defense can stifle great offense with a turnover and being able to get a two-point lead, understanding that you can't get explosive plays. You know, but where the Rams are going to have problems is when I look at Marcus Peters, I see Delta O'Neal. I see a guy that's always going to stack up the stat sheets, going to have a lot of interceptions, but I see a gambler. I see a guy that's not fundamentally sound, a guy that takes too many risks, especially in a defense that's going to put those cornerbacks on an island.
I believe he gets a lot better with Tlaib back. From hearing from people that talk to them, their overall relationship, I get Tlaib back. I want to watch to see how healthy Tlaib is in December, because if he is healthy, then Marcus Peters, I don't need him. Right. To be elite. I don't need him to be talking to. I don't need him all the time to be that. So their third down defense, does that get better? How do they hide Mark Barron as far as a linebacker sub utility?
You gotta be bad. If you're a linebacker that plays safe, you still can't cover nobody?
No.
You're stealing.
No. He's been doing it for a long time. First round draft pick from Alabama.
What's the line, Bart? He couldn't play dead in a country western?
Absolutely.
That is fantastic. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.